One tail or two?
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everyone, again to Tea Time Horrors or Tea Time Horror Stories, whichever one tickles your fancy. I am back, your lovely host, Sam, and we have also returning Joseph. Say hello.
As always, hello.
Hi, we are back. We unfortunately don't have a third person, but this is where we're going to take just a little bit of your time to kind of fill you guys in why we've been gone on this insanely long hiatus and what kind of happened for this to transpire. We didn't forget about you guys. We didn't forget about our podcast. We didn't forget about anything. We just had to backburn it, unfortunately. We had a lot of family issues that arrived or that arised. My grandmother got really sick. Our third person who used to be on with us, James, my brother, he moved and our schedules were really conflicting. We were at the time working a PM schedule, me and Joe.
But
now things have changed quite drastically. Now we still work the same job, we just have completely opposite schedules. Now we have a little bit more free time, and we really wanted to pick this up because this is a passion of ours. At least it is, I mean, for the both of us. I'm a huge murder enthusiast. I love talking about murder or anything true crime. So being away from this kind of, it really, really bothered me. And it just felt like this was a project that I just didn't want to drop. But we had to take a small break, not only because of everything that was going on, but also for myself and mostly me.
Mostly for yourself.
Mostly for me. I had a lot of mental health issues that I had to deal with on my own. I had a lot of health issues that I needed to figure out on my own. And so I had to take a break from almost everything in my life to get myself squared away. But don't worry, ladies, gentlemen, and non-binary people out there, I am in a very happy place and I'm in a very settled place now. I'm on my medication and everything is working great. We are picking up this podcast and hoping to be able to release an episode every week. We haven't decided if it's going to be bi-weekly or weekly. For now, we're going to try and release weekly, but if it starts to get a little too much, we might switch to bi-weekly. So that being said, welcome back, our tea time people. At the time when we left off, we were trying to figure out, what are we going to call our followers? We were thinking of like Mad Hatters, Mad Tea Timers, all different sorts of names, and so on and so forth. And it still hasn't been cemented. If you have anything, if you want to recommend anything to us or what you would like to be called, please reach out to us. We're on all social media platforms at Tea Time Horror Stories. You can even email us at teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com. I'm usually very responsive to that. But, thank you guys for putting up with us. We are hoping to be more consistent. Right now, it's just me and Joe. We will potentially have a third person come on as a guest visit, it could be my dad. You guys liked him when he came on one episode. So maybe my dad, James, might make appearance every so often. Maybe some other random guests when it comes to the certain topic. Or if you like to maybe chime in and be a guest, hit us up. Let us know, you know?
Do you think we should try to get Shannon on here?
I plan to. Shannon, my main man. My main man. I plan on getting him on here as much as I can, but he's a bit of a pansy. I'm sorry, Shannon, if you're listening to this. I love you. But I want to scare you with one of my murder stories. So we will definitely get to that. And who knows, maybe I'll get your wifey on here one day and she can give me her input on some of this stuff. So, yeah, without further ado, we're back. Welcome back, Tea Time Horror Stories. And I hope you guys are excited to, come on this journey with us. We have a whole slew of episodes recorded and ready to be published. In fact, actually, the next two episodes you're going to be hearing after this one are actually going to be old episodes that we recorded nearly a year ago. That's how long we've been gone on hiatus, is for almost a whole year.
It's too long.
Too long. Those two episodes we recorded last year before I had to go on my break. So if they sound a little different or if they seem a little different, that's because, again, they are older episodes. Anything after those two episodes will be the newer episodes that we will start recording on a weekly basis. So stay tuned with us. We have a lot of ideas coming up. We have merch ideas. We have episode ideas. We have guest appearance ideas. All these ideas that we want to try and make happen. So thank you guys for returning with us. And we're so, so excited to do this again. Okay. So it's that also lovely question. Joe, What are you drinking?
Unfortunately, not really drinking anything special today. Just out of pure boredom or laziness, I should say, I have an Izzy drink, a carbonated Izzy drink, sparkling mango flavored. It's a flavored juice beverage blend from concentrate with other natural flavors, but they won't disclose which ones those are. So it's hard to say which ones are actually natural and which ones are artificial, but I'm just going to go with about 90% of this is artificial, which is,
you know, this is not us, you know, being like, hey, Izzy, you want to sponsor us, because that would be great. But you know, it is a drink that he has. And you know, even though our show is Tea Time Horror Stories, there will be times where we'll be drinking things other than tea. So you know, we don't always have tea available. Actually, Joe does, but we don't always drink tea, because if you are a returning person, you know me, Sam, not really a tea person.
She doesn't drink dirty water.
I don't drink dirty water, and if I do drink dirty water, it has to have quite a lot of sugar in it, because I am a sugar fiend. Actually, news, I don't have that much sugar anymore. It's kind of sad, and I miss it, but I don't miss it at the same time. Things have changed a lot in my life. I've lost quite a lot of weight drastically. In a healthy way, though, don't worry, I did it in a healthy way as well. And my body doesn't tolerate sugar as much anymore, so I stick to a lot of things that have low sugar or natural sugars, I guess you can say. So, because that leads me to, what am I drinking?
What are you drinking?
I am drinking OJ. Freshly squeezed orange juice. If Lyndon was listening right now, he'd be very proud of me. This is freshly squeezed orange juice from straight from the orange tree. So this is natural as it's going to get. So now that that's out of the way, I'd like to do some shout outs, right? So shout outs. Happy birthday to James. It is, you know, our third person that used to be on with us. It is actually his birthday as we record this today. So by the time this comes out, it'll be a day late. But hey, you know, happy birthday to James and anyone who is an April baby. Happy birthday to you. If you want to be included in our shout out, just again, give us a drop on our DMs. Give us a, you know, write to us. Whatever you want to do, we'll give you a shout out. All right. But let's get to what you guys are mostly here for. The stories. Today, instead of starting off with a murder or something more extreme, we're going to start off with myth. Yes, so we're starting off with a myth or paranormal, but I do believe
mine is a myth paranormal.
I guess mine is more of just a myth.
Yours than it is more of a cryptid. So yes.
Myth, cryptid, zoology kind of thing. So let's jump to it, shall we?
Let's jump to it.
Who wants to go first?
I think you do.
Oh, well.
It's been a long time since I've done it, and there's going to be a lot of ums that you're going to have to edit out of it.
Oh, my God. So it looks like I've been voluntold. I am going first. All right. So I am covering today something called the jackalope. It's not what you think it is.
Maybe it is.
Or maybe it is. So the jackalope is a mythical creature that is a cross between a jackrabbit and an antelope, a goat, or a deer. It is grouped into what is called the mythological hybrid creature. This is a North American folklore. It is categorized in the fearsome critters. It is said the jackalope has a European cousin called the Wolpertinger, and in Sweden a related species is called the I'm gonna butcher this so bad, excavator. Skavader?
You're going to have to send that to me so I can
S-K-V-A-D-E-R.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. You would have to look that up on Google.
If there's someone out there who speaks Sweden or Swedish, please let us know how to pronounce that correctly. I'm so sorry. You know me. It's back to Sam butchering names really bad. That's just what she does. Alrighty. So I mentioned it is in the fearsome critter category. Do you know what that is?
I do not, but I just kind of figure it's one of those ones that sits on the corner and hisses at you if you get too close to it.
Actually, that's kind of what it is. So a fearsome critter is, well, let me tell you, in North America folklore, fearsome critters were tall tail animals that were basically a joke. It was a walking joke that these wild creatures inhabit the wildness in or around logging camps, more so the Great Lakes regions. They were campfire stories to pass by time, and these critters were usually more comical than frightful. So they just hissed at you in the corner.
That's pretty much right. So fierce.
Right. They weren't exactly the most scary creatures, but they were creatures. So, but like I said before, the jackalope is a taxidermied jackrabbit with antelope horns. It seems the jackalope was first, quote unquote, made or appeared in the 1930s. A man by the name of Douglas Herrick and his brother were hunters who were really skilled at taxidermy. They would take jackrabbits, then graft deer antlers into the jackrabbit's carcass and sell the combination to local hotels in Douglas, Wyoming. People really liked these taxidermy rabbits, and the Douglas made a living off of this stuff. He would make and sell similar jackalopes to retail outlets in South Dakota, and another taxidermist, there you go. Another taxidermist would continue to manufacture the horned rabbits into the 21st century. So, needless to say, the jackalope can be found stuffed and mounted in bars and other places in the United States. So, the jackalope can be found on postcards and other commercial items in America. It has been made into countless logos, and people seem to have taken the title and ran with it. The jackalope has appeared in stories, poems, shows, videos, and games, and you name it, the lopes of jacks have appeared in it. It is said that the Wyoming legislation has considered bills to make the jackalope the state official mythological creature.
That's awesome.
Right. So,
just because of two guys making a profit on something they created, it's now an official.
It hasn't been cryptid yet. They want to make it like the official cryptid of the states, but they haven't just yet.
I wonder what the I guess the cryptid for California would probably be Bigfoot.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Bigfoot's
at least most of the West Coast, maybe.
Maybe. We would have to look into that. If someone knows who, like, what the cryptid is of California, please let us know. Alrighty, let's see. So, that being said, let's get into the details of where this legend first came around. It is said the legend came from the stories in other cultures and other historical times. It is also said that the stories and legends were inspired by the sightings of rabbits infested with soap polymal virus.
Can you say that again one more time?
I'm going to juju it.
Juju. While you do that, I'm going to pop this can open. Took a little more force than it needed.
Shoe papilloma virus.
There. Wow, she said that so slow.
Right. So, it is an actual virus that is something that inhabits. So, again, what is the shoe papilloma virus? Well, let me tell you, the shoe papilloma virus, or SPV, which is what we're going to refer to it as, is known as a cottontail rabbit papilloma virus, CRPV, or papilloma virus 2, is a virus which infects certain rabbit-like creatures, so leprets, causing the keratin in the horns. It causes the keratin, so the thing from, like, their nails.
Their fingernails,
typically on or near the animal's head growth, so it causes them to grow horns. These horns would protrude on many parts of their bodies, including their faces and their necks.
Ow, that actually sounds kind of painful.
It is very, very painful, and they tend to die not that long after it starts happening. So, yes, that is the Chopa pomelomavirus. Anyways, I was able to pull more information and find out that the jackalopes have been spotted before the 1930s. There was a 13th century Persian work an art piece depicting a rabbit with a single horn, much like a unicorn. In Europe, the horned rabbit appears in medieval and Renaissance folklore in Bulgaria and anywhere rabbits are found. So natural history texts such as the History of the Book of Natural Quadrants by Jonas Justus in the 17th century, and illustrations such as beasts were found in the 16th century included the horned hare. So this dates back back in the days. So it has been everywhere. It's been dated back for many, 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 many years, many moons. These texts and pictures show that the hare, as if it was a real life creature, and many believed it was bred to be that way. And in the 18th century, scientists generally rejected the idea of horned hares as just mutations.
Just mutations.
It's basically what it is. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
It is a mutation. So, as mentioned, scientists were convinced that the people in the past were just witnessing an outbreak of CRP virus, and people didn't know better. So, Richard E. Slope, MD.
Would it be possible, since rabbits are considered rodents, would other rodents be able to pick up this disease, or is this localized to just rabbits?
It is the...
Because I'm kind of picturing a capybara with deer antlers on it.
So basically only in the rabbit family.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So Richard E. Schaap, MD, was the man that was named after. He was able to detail in his journal in the 1933s that a wild cottontail rabbit was simply infected bunnies. He was able to examine wild hares that were shot and killed, and he noticed they had numerous horn-like protrusions on their skin over various parts of their bodies. The animals were referred to popularly as horned or warty rabbits. Legends about horned rabbits also occurred in Asia and Africa, as well as Europe, and researchers suspected the changes induced by this virus might underline at least some of those tales. That's where they assumed it came from. In Central America, mythological references to the horned rabbit creature can be found in Hilacon legends. The Hilacon oral traditions have passed on. This is a Native American tribe. Again, I'm really bad at pronouncing names. I'm so sorry. So this tradition has been passed down. Tales of horned rabbits and of deers getting horns from rabbits. The rabbits and deers were paired, though not combined as hybrids. A day signs in the calendar of the Mesoamerican period of the Aztecs as twins brothers.
You have to repeat that again. I got kind of lost when you said Aztec.
So it was depicted in some different cultures of the deer and the rabbit coming together and having children,
mm-hmm,
or babies of jack rabbits with horns because, mm-hmm, from the deers and having different traits as well.
Oh, okay.
So basically, to put it in simple terms, that's what it meant. But so enough about that and where I found it in different other places. I want to jump back to Douglas Herrick again. I thought it was pretty funny. The New York Times attributes... Oh my God, I swear. The New York Times attributes the American jackalope origin to be in the 1932 hunting outing involving Douglas and his brother. After a successful hunting trip, the brothers returned with the carcasses and put the creatures together and then sold them for $10 to Roy Ball, who displayed it in the Douglas Labonte Hotel. The mounted head was sold in 1977. The jackalope became a popular local attraction in Douglas, where the Chamber of Commerce issued jackalope hunting license to tourists. The tags are good for hunting during official jackalope season, which occurs only in one day of the year.
I would assume so.
June 31st.
What's coming up?
There is no June 31st.
That's why I said it's certainly coming up.
June is only 30 days.
Yeah.
So
I mean, June 31st can really be July 1st, can't it?
It doesn't happen. It's not real.
It's kind of like people born on a leap year. Those days don't exist on all the other years.
Right. Well, there's no such thing as June 31st, but they still issued hunting license for people, and it is.
So the hunting license itself is also a myth in itself.
You can
buy it, but the day is the myth.
But wait, there's more.
Oh, jeez.
Right. June 31st is a non-existent date, as June only has 30 days in the month. The license runs from midnight to 2 a.m.
So only 3 hours.
Right. And the hunter must have an IQ greater than 50, but not over 72.
I mean, two hours.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
The hunter must not have an IQ greater than 50, but not over 72.
So the criteria, oh my God. So the criteria is you have to be stupid to buy this.
Thousands of licenses have been issued.
Oh, jeez.
In Henrik's hometown of Douglas, there's an 8-foot statue of a jackalope, and the town hosts an annual Jackalope Day celebration in early June.
That really makes my head hurt a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, I kind of want to see the 8-foot statue, but a thousand?
Thousands of licenses, yes.
So, oh man.
Right. So when I read that, I chuckled a lot in the inside.
So when June 31st actually comes along, people can hunt for this for 2 hours.
Right.
Out of the entire year.
Right.
Right. Oh man.
Yes. So, let's get into the actual myth of the jackalope.
Okay.
Jackalopes are said to be very outlandish, and many claim are tall tales. Jackalopes are said to be incredibly dangerous, that even hunters are afraid of them. Some say to hunt a jackalope, you need to be well-equipped and make sure to wear metal or stove pipes on your legs to keep them from being gored. Apparently, there are stores in Douglas that sell jackalope milk, and the task of milking a jackalope is said to have the risk of one's life due to such a task. But there is one solid way of catching a jackalope. You want to take a wild guess?
Is that a fishing rod?
Nope.
Is it saying like, here, jackalope, jackalope?
Booze. One of the ways to catch a jackalope is to entice it with whiskey, the jackalope's beverage of choice.
I am officially jealous that you got to research this creature, because this sounded like it was a lot of fun to research.
I was dying and trying to keep a straight face because I was doing this at work in the middle of like...
Of a classroom?
In the middle of a classroom, and I was trying not to laugh so hard. So yes, its beverage of choice is whiskey. It is also said jackalopes can imitate a human voice, according to legend. During the day, the Old West, when cowboys gathered by the campfire singing at night, jackalopes could be heard mimicking their voices and singing along.
So this is basically the rabbit version of a Wendigo.
Yeah, or maybe even the rabbit version of the...
Skinwalker?
No, what is the one you just covered with the mines?
Oh, the Tommyknockers.
The Tommyknockers. Like, I just feel like it's with cowboys. So, they would sing. They like to gather at the campfire singing at night. Jackalopes could be heard mimicking their voices and singing along, usually as a terror. It is said that jackalopes, the rare breed, only breeds during lightning flashes, and that their antlers make the act difficult despite the hare's reputation for fertility. So,
so what is it about the horns that makes it difficult? I don't understand.
Maybe they stab each other.
But goats do it all the time.
Okay. Have you ever seen rabbits go at it?
Yes.
It is fucking vicious.
Yes, it is.
They're like, hit it and quit it. They're like, they're not.
Isn't there like a high chance of the male dying too because of a heart attack?
Yes, there are chances of that happening, so you can just assume it's the same thing for the jackalope. So regardless, there is a real life debate on if the jackalope was real or not. Some believe the jackalope is an altered species of rabbit, sometimes rumored to be extinct now. It was considered to be a super rare species of killed rabbits. They are said to be brownish in color, weigh about 3 to 5 pounds more, and move like lightning speed up to 90 miles per hour. They are also known as the warrior rabbits because of how vicious they are and are said to attack on first sight and ask questions later.
Not a rabbit.
And that is the jackalope.
Yeah, I'm officially kind of jealous that you got to research that, because that sounded like it was a lot of fun to look up.
It was short, simple, and sweet. I'm welcoming you guys back with something short and sweet on myself. It was super fun to research the jackalope, but there wasn't a whole lot of information about them, because they're kind of more of a folklore, kind of a made-up creature more than anything else.
Yeah, I've found that a lot of those creatures, they don't really have much.
Right.
Especially like a lot of the Japanese yokai, they don't exactly have much information other than what they look like and what they do, pretty much.
Right, so that's the jackalope. There are tons of pictures online. If you look them up, there's different shapes and sizes. There's fat jackalopes, there's skinny jackalopes.
There are D&D jackalopes.
There are D&D jackalopes, actually. Jackalopes of the world. See, there's Arctic jackalopes, there's greater jackalopes, there are domestic jackalopes. There are all different kinds. See, look.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So they have all different, they come in all forms of colors and size. The horns are all different sizes as well. It just depends on where you find them. So, yeah. That's the jackalope.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like it was a lot of fun to do.
It was. I enjoyed myself when it came to the jackalope, but I just knew it was going to be super short. So hopefully you have something exciting.
I changed up the way that I'm presenting mine. So I'm giving facts, and then I'm also kind of telling a small story on the side, so that way then it kind of like coincides what goes on. So that kind of added a little bit more to what I have to say. So maybe it will add a little bit more to it than just simply reading the facts off.
Okay.
Says Sam with a shrug.
We will see how that goes.
This is probably the first and only time I'm going to do it, because it sounds kind of corny. I've been reading it over and over in my head. I'm just like, should I do it this way or should I just read the facts? But I think I've spent too much time doing it the other way, so I might just do it this way and then see where it goes. So what I am covering today is the curry.
Curry, as in like the food?
Yeah, almost like the food. So, curry, K-U-R-I, is how it is spelled.
Curry?
Yeah. So, the curry, when you first hear of this creature's name, I assume you assume that it is Eastern origin, mainly Japanese, right? Or like some kind of Middle Eastern.
Yeah, something Asian.
Yeah, but surprise, surprise, it's actually of English folklore and has also been known as the phantom parasite.
Interesting.
Yeah. This was kind of one that I randomly stumbled upon, so I thought it was pretty interesting and thought I'd give a little bit more information on it, or find more information on it when I found it. So it is of English folklore, and it is considered the phantom parasite, and the reason why, or it is thought to be believed as a cautionary tale, or going to its origins, is thought to be as a cautionary tale, as a way to warn people to stay away, or to not stray away too far from a path or a roadside that has been traveled frequently. It is also seen as a way to respect the dead if you come across a graveyard, especially if the graveyard was off the beaten path, as uneasy spirits dwell or haunt in that area. The curry is described to be a small shadow-like creature or wraith, often described to be cloaked in darkness. Some are described as having a troll or goblin-like face, which it reveals to its host the longer it is attached to it. But before I continue, let's take a step back and explore the area where we can actually find or encounter the curry. As hinted at before, the Kree can be found primarily in a woodland surrounding, in an area far from any known path. So, with that in mind, let's say that you are on a camping trip. During this camping trip, you consider going on a short hike to take in the view and see what flora and fauna we can find and identify. Along your hike, you come across a hidden trail, a trail seeming to only be traveled by local wildlife. The desire for adventure calls to you, and the excitement is almost electrifying. The day progresses into night, and night starts to fall. Luckily, you travel in mostly a straight line from the original path in order to keep track of the direction you came from. However, the area you stop at before turning back seems a little off. The air seems almost stale. No sound from the surrounding environment can be heard, not even the buzzing of flies or birds chirping. The faint smell of something foul lingers, and the feeling of being watched sends a shiver down your spine. Your fight or flight response begins to kick in, and in a rush you turn back the way you came, and for some reason you decide to break into a straight sprint. As you take a few paces, you trip on something solid. As you pick yourself up and regain your balance, you now break back into a run. You take a panic look back to see what you had tripped on, and all you can make out is a large, old, and ragged boot that with something inside it. However, adrenaline coursing through your body causes tunnel vision, and you are unable to make out the object inside the boot. Yeah, the original trail you were on before the detour comes into view, and a feeling of relief envelops you. Getting the feeling that you are still in danger, you keep your pace until you finally reach the edge of the hidden trail. It is here where you decide to slow down and look back. A cold sweat beads across your forehead. Your senses and the surrounding area slowly seem to be returning back to normal, almost to the point of wondering why or from what you had been running from to begin with. You even let out an exhausted laugh, but even doing so causes pain in your neck. Must have been from when I tripped, you think to yourself. Heading back to the campsite to meet up with your friends, you think back to the boot you tripped on and try to make out what you saw inside, but you can't be too sure of what it was. Making it back to camp, your friends greet you. "You okay?" one of the friends asks. You rub your neck from the pain that is now spreading down your back. Yeah, I may have pulled something while hiking on the trail. Now, coming back to the Kree, they are described to be spirits which haunt a specific area. The area in question is always a place where someone has passed away in the wilderness or buried in a similar area in a shallow grave. These areas can also be consistent of makeshift graves or areas where an individual has died on or near an unknown trail. Oftentimes, they are described as being small humanoid or goblin-like creatures like I had mentioned earlier, who lay and wait for unsuspecting travelers. Some believe the Kree to be shapeless, sometimes like a wraith also, like I mentioned before. Oftentimes, they are described as being small humanoid or goblin-like creatures who lay and wait for unsuspecting travelers. Some believe the Kree to be a shapeless and dark entity identical to a shadow. There are also some who believe that they lay in wait and cannot be seen on our plane of existence. Once someone happens to stumble upon the Kree's location, the Kree itself latches onto its host. It is here where the host begins to experience signs of possession similar to that of demonic possession.
So they're like on the third plane?
Yeah, something like that. They are believed to be like on the ethereal plane.
So
are
they Bigfoot cousins?
It's possible.
Because that's where they say Bigfoot resides. Bigfoot only wants to be seen when he wants you to see him, and he resides on the third plane.
So that's the thing. The reason why it's considered the parasite phantom or the phantom parasite is because it kind of latches onto you and then feeds off of the fear that's created when it starts making you get a little bit more insane.
We need to get Andrew on here when we're talking about the third plane, and he'll go on for hours about this.
Yeah, he would.
We should talk to him about the Kree, and we should get his input on that. I think he would really give us some really good information.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. Maybe that's what continuously tries to trip you at work.
I know, right? So there's this particular sidewalk that, in order to get from one building to another, to where we work at, you have to pass this electrical box. And several times I have almost fallen on my face. I don't know what it is. I'm just walking normally. I know I can be a clumsy individual, but whatever it is, I'm just walking normally. And then out of nowhere, I trip and I nearly fall flat on my face. And I don't know what it is, but I just feel like there's something that's like grabbing my foot and causing me to try and trip.
I've seen it.
Right. So it's super, super weird. I don't know what it is, but I always feel like something's grabbing my foot and trying to make me trip there.
Yeah.
Is it the Curry?
It could be the Curry. Or as you've been calling it lately, the Curran.
Oops.
Yeah. That's all right, though. It's kind of...
That's just Sam mispronouncing everything anyways. I always mispronounce everything. That's just me.
I called it the Curran. I even spelled it Curry, like C-U-R-R-Y.
I want to make some Japanese curry now.
Yeah, it sounds good. Okay. So those of you who have seen the movie The Conjuring may remember the scene where Ed Warren was lecturing a class. He had mentioned that there are three main stages of possession. So the stages of possession that the curry goes through is kind of similar to this. So the first stage he describes is the infestation stage. So it's the stage where the host begins to hear incomprehensible whispering or disembodied footsteps. An individual may even sense the presence of another being. So back to the camping trip. The first night there are no physical or mental signs of possession. In fact, aside from the fall you took earlier in the day, life seems to have continued as normal with the inclusion of the pain in your neck. It isn't until later in the night that you start to notice slight sounds of whispering and mumbling. Before you head to your tent to sleep, you turn and tilt your head towards your friends, asking them to repeat themselves, but all they say is that they had not been saying anything or at least speaking directly to you. They look at you with concern as you appear pale and sickly. The night doesn't seem to improve as you constantly toss and turn from weird dreams that you have while sleeping. In your dream, there really isn't anything out of the ordinary except for the small shadowy figure following you around, keeping its distance but still making its presence known by peeking out from, let's say, a corner or behind a tree and staying just outside of your field of vision. So, with that in mind, one of the first things that they do is they kind of start to go into like a state of madness where they kind of play tricks on you by whispering nonsense into your ear. The first signs of infestation start out as slow and subtle.
We call that schizophrenia.
Sometimes, yeah. Or maybe that's just the curry again. Just kidding. In the beginning, the curry torments its host by whispering into their ear. Most of the time, they will be light and insignificant, and oftentimes it will sound like gibberish or ambient noise. For example, it will sound like leaves rustling in the wind or an annoying buzzing sound. The other part of this is the curry will then begin to invade the dreams of its hosts, appearing as objects or even creatures or other people of no great significance. Over time, it will start to present itself as a shadowy figure or something its host fears, resulting in its host's dreams to become nightmares. And that's primarily what the Curry preys upon, is your own fear.
Why does it remind me of a djinn?
It honestly kind of reminds me a little bit of a djinn also.
For those who don't know what a djinn is like a...
It's more of a Middle Eastern creature that invades your sleep. So if you have watched shows like The Witcher on Netflix...
Or Supernatural.
They have kind of like a creature that invades your dreams and it feeds off of your dream state. So basically the... And oh geez, I kind of wish Andrew was here because he's all about dreaming. Because dreaming is a way of astral projection. And one thing that these creatures feed off of is the energy that you emit when you're astral projecting while sleeping.
So I have a feeling they're like close cousins.
I honestly, there weirdly wasn't any correlation between the two in all of the things that I had looked up. There was nothing relating it to a djinn, and it's funny because I didn't even think about that until right now when you had mentioned it.
Interesting. Well, the djinn will be something that we will cover later on in another episode, so stay tuned for that.
Yes, stay tuned. When you wake up the next day, you still see the shadow just out of your peripheral vision, and the whispering gets louder and clearer. As the day progresses, your friends begin to see you mutter and talk to yourself. When they ask you who it was you were talking to, you mention that you were answering a question or replying to something one of your friends had said. Confused, they say that they didn't ask you anything, nor were they saying anything. You shrug it off, and over time, you start to think that it may just be due to a fever that you can feel rising in you that is causing you to hear things. Which brings us to the next stage of possession, which is oppression. The stage in which an entity attempts to further separate you from friends and family in order to weaken your spirit. The way that Curry does this is by intensifying your dreams and causing them to become nightmares. Exhausted from the night before, you decide to take a nap to try to recover some of your strength. While you nap, you quickly fall into a dream state where everything seems off. The air feels heavy, your friends and family have their backs turned to you. You try to call out to them, but nobody is responding. You feel the presence of being watched, so you turn around to see if there's anything there, and all you see is a dark shadow dart behind a nearby tree. You turn back toward the person nearest to you, and you try to turn them to look at you. As you turn them into their direction, their face is horribly disfigured and contorted. You begin to panic as you go to the next person to see their faces in the same twisted and contorted state. Panic continues to rise as you feel a clawed hand grasp your shoulder. You stir and wake from the nightmare as one of your friends squeezes your shoulder to wake you up. "Are you all right?" they ask. You rub the sleep from your eyes to get a better look at your friend, only to find that their face is the same contorted state that you saw in your dream. Out of fury, you use what strength you have left to shove them away. Your friend looks at you irritated and concerned, their face looking normal now. You hear the whispering again, only now the voice is starting to become clearer. "You can't trust them," it says. "You can't trust anyone. They're out to get you." You give a hurried apology and rush off towards your tent. Over time, the whispering gets louder and louder. Anytime your friends try to check in on you, their faces appear the same way, distorted and disfigured. You try to sleep it off, but every time you have a nightmare, you wake up abruptly and occasionally find new scratch marks on your arms, or your legs or other parts of your body. The whispering intensifies, telling you that it's them doing it, and that it's the ones who say they're your friends. Fearing for your life, you force yourself to stay awake. In the morning, you hear the voices of your friends, concerned. They ask if you are okay, but you pretend not to hear them. They say they contacted the park ranger to have them take you to the infirmary on the camping grounds to get you help, but you don't respond to them. So part of this is the oppression part. So the Curie is slowly trying to push you away from your friends and family, so that way then you're basically more vulnerable and are
this just sounds
to
like
over.
a demonic like possession.
I mean, for the most part, it basically is a demonic possession.
This feels more paranormal than it does myth.
Yeah. So I mean, when I first looked it up, the reason why it's considered a myth is simply because the original backstories to it is as a cautionary tale to prevent people from straying too far away from a
campsite
path.
Okay.
Or campsite. So one thing that they did kind of make reference to as far as like comparison is the whole thing of Red Riding Hood, where she went to go and take stuff to her grandmother, so that way then her grandmother can
get better
because I guess she was sick in it. So in the original Grimm storyline, Red Riding Hood actually doesn't survive. So the wolf asks Red Riding Hood where she's headed. So when she tells him, he runs ahead of her, eats the grandma, and then waits for her to come by. And when he actually gets to the grandma's house, he eats her and then leaves the house.
Right.
So that's what the original story is, and it's to tell people not to trust strangers or stray too far away from the path you were told to take. So this is kind of in relation to that. So that's the reason why they consider this more as a myth rather than a paranormal. So the story that I'm kind of reading off is something that I kind of created. So I thought it would be a little bit more interesting rather than just reading notes and facts. So giving a little bit of a scenario. When the curry becomes more familiar with its host, it moves into the more severe stage. The curry's victim will then start to experience the physical aspects of the possession, scratches or scraping. Bruises can even appear on the host. Usually these are found upon waking up, and the host will frequently feel the sensation of spider webs or cobwebs brushing against her skin, as if the curry itself is kind of like caressing them while they're walking by.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Don't touch me. Don't touch me there.
That's my
purse. That's a no-no spot. Now touch the doll. Where did you get touched on the doll?
Can you point on the doll where you were touched? As your friends wait for the park ranger to arrive to help take you to the infirmary, you escape by cutting a hole in the back of the tent so that nobody really notices you leaving. So part of the possession aspect of this is you continuously and constantly hear screaming from somebody you know.
Again,
so this is something that the
ladies and gents, we call that schizophrenia. You should see a medical professional to help you with that.
Yeah,
it is treatable. We can get help for you.
We can. Maybe not us, but somebody close
God,
to you can.
Definitely not me. Don't count on me on that. Don't DM me with that information. I am a lost cause.
No, you're not. You're not a lost cause. But anyway, before the park ranger can get to you, so that way then they can get you to the infirmary in order to help you, you decide to try to escape by cutting a hole in the back of the tent. As you do that, you start to hear crying and begging to return to the spot that you came from before. Actually, taking a few steps back, the reason why your friends and family the reason why you start to see their face kind of obscured and disfigured is because that is like subtle hints that the Kiri is revealing itself to you, but it's kind of like imposing its face onto theirs. So that way, when you see them, you slowly start to go mad a little bit.
We're all a little mad here. It's okay.
We're all mad down here. We all float down here too.
Yes, we do.
So as that's happening, over time, the Curry's influence over its victim eventually drives its host to paranoia and also to hallucination. These hallucinations would consist of seeing shadows in the corner of your eye, whispering and becoming louder. The Curry can also obscure or distort the faces of its friends and family, further causing them to distance themselves from from those who can actually help. It is believed that this is the Curry's final revealing. This is the Curry finally revealing itself to its host in order to bring its victim to its final stage of possession. So that's pretty much building.
So in the end, the Curry is just trying to possess its host.
Yeah. So the main premise of the Curry possessing its host is so that it can eventually force and convince its host to follow it to the place where the person initially got latched onto the person. So as you're following the voice to the location that the Curry is telling you to go, it doesn't always take you back to the same location that it died, and it'll actually have you wander around practically in circles in the middle of nowhere until you eventually die of either
dehydration or
passing out. And from there, the final thing that the Curry does is that it then pulls your soul down to the ethereal plane in order to devour or to bring it to hell, essentially. So that's
we definitely
about.
Need to bring up this creature to Andrew, yeah. And Andrew will have a kick. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would just die having to hear about this creature. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that he would want to know more. So, but
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Andrew, I'm going to just do a big shout out to Andrew right now. He doesn't listen to our podcast. In fact, he probably doesn't even know about our podcast, but we'll probably tell him about it. Big shout out to Andrew. He is kind of like our work buddy. He's our bestie at work. He is a super, super awesome guy, super spiritual, has a lot of knowledge and stuff like this. He gets a kick off of. So big shout out to Andrew. If you hear this, this goes out to you.
We miss you.
We missed, not really. We saw him earlier today.
But anyway, because of starvation and dehydration, being too weak for anything else, the victim collapses and eventually dies if they're not found. Once the host dies, the Kyrie then takes its victim's soul to the underworld. Once this is done, the Kyrie then returns to the waking world in the spot where its last victim died, and thus the Kyrie waits for a new host in order to start the process over again. So it's literally one of those parasites that drains. It sits and wait. It's kind of like one of those funnel web spiders that sit and wait. And then once a viable host comes along, it latches on. It slowly possesses them over a period of time. So this is kind of why I think this is similar to demonic possession, but not exactly quite demonic possession, because it's never, the only thing it's really doing is influencing your ability to comprehend the people that are around you.
Demonic to possession does that as well. Possession. This sounds like demonic possession, but from another culture, like another culture standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds more paranormal than myth, but if this is a myth, then holy shit, they did a good job scaring people to keep them on the path.
Yeah.
Because that's some scary shit right there. Is there any like cure or any way to get the curing off you?
So the only thing that I was able to find is that if you're able to get close enough to death for it to think that you were dead, or at least this is my logic, I wasn't really able to find anything concrete as far as a way to get it off of you.
So once it latches on you, you're fucked.
Yeah, so it's kind of like one of those things. Have you ever seen, you've seen Drag Me to Hell, right?
Right.
So that scene where the main character goes through a lot of shit to try to get rid of whatever demonic entity is latching onto her, and in the end she gets
still dragged down.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the same thing. So basically if you get a Kiri on you, you're Don't drop curry on you.
Don't drop curry on you.
Don't drop curry on
don't
you.
Don't wander aimlessly in the woods. Don't stumble upon any Indian burial grounds or anything like that, because it's mostly whenever you stumble across a shallow grave or a makeshift grave that where somebody had died and wasn't discovered. So even if somebody gets murdered by a serial killer and then their body gets dumped in the woods or something like that, if their body never gets found, a Kyrie can technically inhabit that area. And when wait for somebody to wander by, get latched onto, and then it's all downhill from there.
It's game over, man. Game over.
So yeah, so that once that happens, the process basically starts over again, where it lies and waits, it latches onto a host, it begins with the whispers and the night and the subtle nightmares where it's kind of creeping in the corner of your eye.
So this, and it sounds like it's quick. Like it sounds like this can take a matter of hours to days, and maybe not weeks, but like days to do.
I think it varies. It didn't really give any specific time frame. I more or less gave it this, like a span of like 3 or 4 days, just because how long do people usually go camping for? It's usually anywhere between like 2 to 3 days, to 4 days, anywhere between that time. So I figured that would probably be the easiest way, and especially since you're not going to a place where you're comfortable at, you're technically staying in an unfamiliar area, which can increase your stress levels when certain things like that happen. But Yeah.
That's the curry?
That's the curry.
Wow. So that's just demonic possession to the 10th power. That's talking about the ethereal planes. It's talking about that talks about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think the creature itself is more paranormal, while the situation itself, or like the tale it originates from, is more myth.
Right. I feel like that was a mix between paranormal and myth, but if it is a mythological creature, I believe you on that, and it's just, I like your story that you added to it.
Probably could have slowed down a little bit in the beginning. I think I was just too anxious.
It's good. It's good. It's kind of creepy, actually, because, again, ladies and gentlemen, that sounds like schizophrenia. If you have any mental issues, please seek a trained medical professional, and they will help you with that. But that concludes our first episode in a really long time. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know it's a little bit different because we only had two people. That's my cat, Gino. That's cat ASMR. So, yeah, that concludes our first episode. We're going to just start this as season 3 of Tea Time Horror Stories. This is our first episode. We're starting off with a myth. Pretty basic, pretty easy. Thank you guys for sticking with us. Again, this is going to be our first episode of season 3. The next two episodes that you're going to hear are going to be the ones that we recorded some time ago, about a year ago. So if they sound a little different, or if they are a little different, just, you know, bear with us on that. And then by the fourth episode, it should be a continuation of our new material that we're going to start producing. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Maybe by the fourth episode, we'll have a third person join us. We don't know yet. That we're going to play by ear. It might just be me and Joe for a little while until we can find a third person or a third guest to come in every so often to hear us talk about our craziness. So if you guys have any feedback, or if you guys like to reach out to us, we're on all social media. We have Instagram, we have Twitter, and we have Facebook. We are Tea Time Horror Stories, or you can always email us at teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com for any requests or anything whatsoever. We miss you guys, and we're glad to be back. So stay spooky, y'all.
Happy haunting.
Bye.